proper observance of the Seder, I mean, given all the energy that's put into it, you know, preparing for Pesach is an arduous task.
Cleaning the house and shopping and the food, you know, tremendous amount of effort and work goes into it. In a sense, the shame is
that when the moment actually arrives, everybody's basically exhausted, unfortunately.
And
this year should be a little bit easier.
You have the second day.
By the second day, you're ready. It's harder. Okay. The problem is, there are two problems at all. First of all, obviously, they're in a state of exhaustion. That day itself is very busy. You know, with the searches conducted the night before, and the burning of the chametz that day, and the women are busy all day preparing and cooking, and you know, you're running around getting ready for Yantar. By the time it comes, it's already late, and you're tired. Especially problematic, it's not just the fact that the adults are tired, but the children. The whole thing is designed to revolve around the child, and that's why there are certain mechanisms in the alatni to keep people away, adopt on that mechanism. That's one of the problems. The other problem, I think, is more significant, and that is that it's one of those things, it's one of those mitzvahs that can only be observed properly if you're prepared, without preparation. If you come to the Seder unprepared, it's very hard to have a meaningful Seder. Because what you're going to wind up doing, you don't have time to work out any ideas on the spot, you're not prepared. You haven't given it any thought. So basically, you're just going to read Haggadah and do a few songs. And, you know, eat the food, whatever it is, and that's going to be it. So it is the kind of thing.
It's the kind of thing, like you said, even doing tshuva on,
you know, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur requires preparation.
If you don't prepare, it's very hard to get the full meaning of the day. I think that this is very applicable. The reason why I say this year should be easier is because, ironically, you may think it's more difficult, but the fact of the matter is, it comes out on Motzei Shabbat, so you have no choice. You've done all your work already on Friday. So you've exhausted Friday night. And you sleep Shabbos afternoon and Friday night, Saturday night, everything should be okay. So it should be more relaxed. And you have the whole day Shabbos to do that better and to do more learning for your prepared. Let's see if we can take up just some ideas. I'm not going to go through the entire agada, obviously. But, if you're all familiar with the basic pattern, it begins, the Seder begins with the recitation of Kiddush. Okay. And Kiddush is applicable on every Yantar, on Shabbos and on every Yantar, of course. And Kiddush on this night is also considered one of the four kosher. And that's why, interestingly enough, you know that the halacha is that you can normally usher in Shabbos and Yantar earlier, from Flagamen, in fact, like in the summertime, when it's still day. Because you can increase. You can add to Shabbos, you can add to the Yom Tov. It's called the Tosva Shabbos, Tosva Yantar. And on Pesach you can do the same thing, but you cannot make Kiddush, you can't recite the Kiddush. Even let's say you lit the candles and you've been makabel Yom Tov, you've accepted Yom Tov upon yourself. And it's still daytime. So for you it's Yom Tov of Pesach. And normally on the Yom Tov you can make Kiddush at this point. On Shabbos, in the summertime, you can make Kiddush at this point. However, on Pesach, you cannot make Kiddush till actual nightfall. At least, at the minimum. Approximately 50 minutes after sunset.
Why is that?
And the answer is
because the mitzvah of Sifra Yetzias Mitzrayim, that's the central mitzvah of the night,
that must be done on Leil Pesach,
the night of Pesach. So it's interesting, even if you can accept the Yom Tov, that means you're adding from the Chol to the Holy, and it's still daytime. So it's true that it's Yom Tov of Pesach, but it's not the Laila of Pesach. Laila has to be at a certain particular time. And the mitzvah telling the story of the Yetzias Mitzrayim has to be B'Shoah She'es Matzah Umar Menachem Uchanam,
when there is Matzah and Morrow. The story must be told not just as an abstract discussion, but it has to be in relationship to concrete objects
that have certain significations, contain certain ideas. So what is the time of Matzah? Matzah can only be eaten by night, and therefore the entire Seder can only be done at night. Now Kiddush is not just recitation of the holiness of the day, but it's also a form of Sifra. You see it tonight.
it partakes of deeper Yeshiva science through Kiddush, Al Yedei Kiddush. That's one of the ways in which you just, in which they're telling the story that this night is different. Why is this night different? Because this night has holiness. What's the holiness of this night? Because we were taken out of Egypt. So already in Kiddush, you are beginning to fulfill the obligation of telling the story of the Yeshiva science. That's why Kiddush on this night, you have to wait until actual nightfall, and you couldn't make it earlier. That's an important point to remember, but I'm sure you're often in all the shuls, they gear it that way. They don't daven until it's actual nightfall. Okay. Then, so you're starting off with Kiddush, and then, of course, there's the Karpas. Right afterwards, there's the Karpas, which, I don't know if everybody's familiar with the correct way of doing Karpas. Basically, it's taking a vegetable. I'm not going to concentrate on all these different halachas over here as far as that's concerned. Some take a potato, some take a celery, whatever the case may be. That's not really. And you dip it into salt water. But that's not the conclusion of Karpas. What is the conclusion? There's another part of Karpas that I'm not sure if everybody's familiar with. And what's that? That's removing the tater plate. From the table. You're supposed to remove it. In ancient times, each party used to have these little, what do they call these little trays, tray tables. They had their own, person had his own tray, they'd remove the tray. Today we only got one table. So the state of play should be removed at that point. And that's the conclusion of the mitzvah, of Karpas, the removal of the plate. What is the purpose of Karpas? Anyone? Yes? Anyone take a guess? The institution is done for one reason, to elicit the curiosity of the child. The whole day revolves around the child. Because, right, it's a play, it's very, but it's important to know this, that the Rambam quotes it in Perichvi, Yehovah's Chametz Amata, Lord of Chametz Amata, he says it is required to do a shinui, to do something which is different on this night, so that the children will see and they'll ask. And they'll say, Manishtana Halak. They'll be Manishtana comes Ayeti. In other words, the way they structure it will soon see the nature of the mitzvah. The mitzvah of Sibu Yatiyat Design is a very, very fascinating mitzvah. It's not as simple as you think. It is structured, it's an educational obligation. This is the night which was designated for the transmission of the Masorah from one generation to the next. So you see their philosophy of teaching. The objective is to transmit the ideas to the child, to the next generation, and their philosophy of education was that the best explanations, the most meaningful answers, are those which come as a result of a natural question of the
child.
To elicit his interest. They didn't hold from a captive audience. They didn't often sitting them down and lecturing to them. So therefore they went out of their way to devise different things that would attract his attention. That's where the idea of the shinui, because it's not the normal thing to have a vegetable before the meal. We're about to sit down for the meal, and now we're just dipping this vegetable, and then we're taking the plate away. Why are we taking the plate away? It's because it's something which is completely unusual. And the great rabbis, each one would do their own, make up their own shinuyim, because after a while, this doesn't have an effect upon the child. So each person is supposed to devise his own particular shinuyim, his own change, to attract the attention of the child. Today, the Anothe Manishtana, so that he can answer them.
Okay.
He says, Chot and Mata Zem Izeh. They would grab the Mata from each other. They'd make up little games amongst themselves. The Chacham. There would be different things just to attract the attention. So the truth of the matter is that the Karpas that they gave us is an objective change. It's an objective change, and that's the minna. You're supposed to do that. But in addition to that, you're supposed to make up your own subjective change to get, if you see it's not having an effect. And it's not arousing the interest of the child, so you do some other kind of crazy thing. Every person according to his own creativity to get the child involved. That is the mitzvah of Karpas. And then you have the Manishtana, which you're familiar with. The questions, the four questions pertaining to the basic mitzvahs of the night. Now, what I want to do, just let me outline what I'd like to do. What I wanted to take up today was the inyan of the above what? Can I get our bottom Dibra Torah? What is that talking about? Who are these four? Why did you pick these four? And what's the nature of each? What makes him a Chacham? What makes him a Rasha? And what are the particular answers? What's their question? What's their answers? And what is the purpose of having this idea of the four sons included in the Haggadah altogether? Where does it fit into the whole context? Okay? After the recitation of the four questions, we have Avadim Ayinu L'Farav Mitzrayim. He was slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt, and the Lord our God took us out of there with a outstretched arm and a mighty hand. Now, if God had not taken our fathers out of Egypt, then we and our children's children would have been enslaved to Pharaoh in Egypt. That's the first idea of the story. And even if we are all chachamim, we're all people of wisdom, kulan levonim, we're all people of discernment, which means we have knowledge, but not only that, we have the ability logically to deduce one thing from another thing. Kulanu yodin at Torah, we all know the Torah, we're masters of Torah. Mitzvah aleinu l'sdaper l'sias mitzrayim. It is a mitzvah it is incumbent upon us to tell, to discuss the story of the Exodus from Egypt. That's the second idea. The third idea is v'chacham rav l'sdaper. And whoever extends, whoever increases the recitation of the story of l'sdaper mitzrayim, Arayz and Meshubach, he's praiseworthy. You have three different ideas over here. So right away you have material for discussion. What are the three basic ideas? Now, you know the approach. Everything begins with a question, especially on this night. What's the question? Of these three statements, which one would you say is problematical? So I feel even though we're all wise, even though we all know the Torah, it's still a mitzvah to perform the mitzvah of CBCS and Zion. Now, the question is, of course, what's the Chiddush? Where do we find any law of the Torah that's not applicable to the Chacham, to those who are wise? Does that apply to the Mata? Did anyone have to tell me that even though I'm Talmud Chacham, I still have to do the Mata? You don't find that concept anywhere else. So, of course, if you were to ask somebody, with regard to this mitzvah, would you say that if someone is a Talmud Chacham and knows the entire Torah, he doesn't have to do the mitzvah? Of course he has to do the mitzvah. So why would you think that this person should be exempt? Because he knows he's such a wise person. So what? In other words, since the nature of this mitzvah is to transmit a certain story, the story of the secret of Mitzrayim, I can understand. You have to realize, the Torah is not that simple. The Torah, no one can ever reach the point where he knows all of Torah. That's an impossibility. The Torah is like the world of nature. It's the infinite wisdom of God. So there's no such thing as a person reaching the point where he knows all the answers, where he can't learn anything new. That's simply an impossibility when it comes to Torah. There's always something new, as we'll soon see. However, you might think that in this particular mitzvah, what is the obligation to transmit the information that pertains to the story of the Exodus from Egypt. Now, that there's a tremendous body of material on that. You can't just say it's a simple thing. I would go beyond that. It's not just the mere psukim in the Torah, because then you have all the chazal. And it's more than that. It's also to know how the halachos fit in. There's a tremendous amount of knowledge and information. Because even if you know the factual story, the historical, you know, the chumash, what about all the halachos and how the halachos tie in? There's a tremendous body of knowledge. That's why it says, if we're Yodim Es HaTorah, what about an individual like Rav Moshe Feinstein that knows, he knows all the Gemaras and he knows all of the Medrashim, he knows everything there is to know. He's a complete mumcha, he's a complete expert on the subject. But what is the point? So you might think that you're only obligated in the mitzvah insofar as you're involved in the obtainment of new information. And that will take quite a time, but there will be a point in time when a person will say he's an expert on the subject. That's not to say that I can't learn anything new, but we do operate in our framework, we do operate with the concept of an expert. means somebody's on the Sanhedrin. He has to be a mumcha. He gives a smicha. When you give a person smicha, we don't mean to say that he knows it all. There's no such thing. Even Moshe Rabbeinu, there were questions that he couldn't answer. But nevertheless, in our framework, he definitely will be regarded as someone who is an expert in that particular area. If that's the case, if the objective of this mitzvah is to obtain information pertaining to the subject, then you could say that it reaches a point in time. There's no purpose. He's already achieved that. So what's the answer? So if that's what's the other side of the coin? That was just what we call the halakha. In other words, the premise. It is what? Good, good. All right, say it. So what is the objective? Okay. Remember that to be involved in that area, to be involved in that particular, the involvement of the individual as an investigator in that particular area. That's the purpose of the thing. So even if you have all the information, now I have to bring in that it's not just because of it. That there's no such thing, like the Gemara says, aim based medrash b'li chiddush. There's no study session without something new. We don't have this concept of this repetition. We do have a concept of chazar, to review. But our concept is that when you review something, from the new perspective, you'll always find something new. That's in the nature of Torah. That's in the nature of Torah study. Why? Because Torah reflects the infinite wisdom of the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Now, in any human system, you couldn't have this statement. In any human system, if you're reading the tax code or whatever set of instructions, whatever book, no matter how complicated, it's finite. So there'll come a point where there's nothing new for you to get. But when you're studying the Chachma of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is infinite, and we can only get a certain small amount of it, so there's always something new to be gained. We can always get closer and closer. You can never grasp the totality. That's true of Torah knowledge, you see? So since we're saying that the purpose of the mitzvah is not the transmission of the information, but for the individual to be immersed in that area as an investigator, to be involved in those ideas, so that's why even the greatest wise person has to be involved in those areas. That is the connecting link. You see, that's why it also mentions the next statement, Kolam Arba. That since that's the point, that the essence of the mitzvah is to be involved in the ideas that pertain to it, to think back on those ideas because of the effect that those ideas will have upon you and your relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why Kolam Arba. Kolam Marv is a very important statement. The same cannot be said concerning every mitzvah. Would you say that whoever's Marv and Achilas Mata have raised a mishubach? Would you ever hear a statement like that? Is there a mitzvah? We do eat a lot of mitzvah. The basic mitzvah of Torah is eating kazayim, which is basically an ounce. But you and I, we all know that we eat a lot more than that. Because we eat the matzah, then we have the korach, we eat matzah again, then we have the afikoman. Hopefully we still have room for the afikoman. There's supposed to be some room for the afikoman. But that's the reason why we do so is only because of doubts that we have in halacha that we can't clear up today because we don't have the Sanhedrin. But if we were able to do so, if we had the Sanhedrin and we cleared up all the doubts, so then, and we had the Beis Hamikdash, we'd only have one kazayim. That's it. And the kazayim would be eaten together with the Korban Pesach and the Maror. Right? On Matzos and Maror Yochlu. So, if that's the case, given that situation, that I fulfilled my obligation, I ate my kazayim with matzah, would you say that there is a mitzvah after that to eat more matzah? The more matzah I eat, the more mitzvah I have. In fact, is there a mitzvah? I'll go even further. Is there a mitzvah to eat matzah throughout the rest of Pesach? There's no mitzvah to eat. How do you know that? How do you know it's just a... It's interesting. This is a side point. Most posts from old, that there's no mitzvah whatsoever to eat matzah the rest of Pesach. But the halacha simply, you don't have to. It's different than sukkah. Sukkah you're obligated to eat in the sukkah on the first night. And afterwards, after the first night, the halacha is that if you're having a regular meal, so then you must have it in the sukkah. Because that is a demonstration of where you've established residency. So any act which demonstrates residency must be done in the sukkah. But if you're just having fruit, which is not, people have fruits on the go, so you don't have to have the sukkah for that. So, technically speaking, as far as eating is concerned, after the first dance, if a person is not going to have a regular meal, or whatever, he's on the liquid diet for the rest of his life. No, it's just problems with that, because he's supposed to rejoice on the holiday. But he wouldn't require sukkah. It's from the standpoint of what? From the standpoint of eating. Of course, he's running into a problem with sleeping. But I'm not going to get into that whole controversy. Okay? We'll save that for sukkah. However, you will agree, though, that if the person's having a regular meal, he must have it in a sukkah, and he makes the bracha, because he then fulfills the mitzvah of sukkah. So now the question is like this. Matzah on the rest of the days of Pesach. Are we simply, clearly there's an obligation. You're not obligated. But if you go ahead and do so, do you get a mitzvah of eating matzah? When you eat it? In other words, one can say there's no obligation. Just like there's no obligation to eat in the sukkah. But if you do go ahead and eat a regular meal and do it in the sukkah, you make a bracha and you get a mitzvah. Yes, you do. I share kisham the tosef with yivaro, alachilas matzah. That's right. Ah, that's a very good point. That's a very good point. So since there's no bracha, and there's just a moshe lechem aretz, you can prove from there that there's no mitzvah at all. It's completely voluntary. You don't have to eat it, and if you do eat it, and it's nice, you're not getting a mitzvah. You're not getting a mitzvah. Right. Except, there was one authority who held differently. The Vilna Gaon, he's the only Leon Paschal like him. He held, if I'm not mistaken, that you make a bracha every time you eat matzah. Because he held that it's compared just to the case of sukkah. That's an interesting piece of information. Because there is a gzeirah shavah between sukkah and Pesach. And he held that the analogy between the two extends to this point. That is to say, that on the first night, it's obligatory on Pesach to eat matzah, and on sukkah to dwell in the sukkah. The remaining days, it's not obligatory, it's voluntary, it's up to the person. If the person is a traveler, if he's traveling on the road, so he's patur from sukkah, because he's not establishing any residency. He's a wanderer. On the first night, you have to find the sukkah. See, but when he does establish residency in the sukkah, it constitutes a mitzvah, he makes a bracha. As you know, during sukkah. So he held the same thing with regard to matzah. But, it's an interesting piece of information. He's the only one who held that way. And we don't pass him. So, therefore, once you've eaten your kezias of matzah, you fulfill your obligation, and we don't say, we wouldn't say that if you ate three kezaisim or four kezaisim, I raised them a shubach. Okay? So what is the point over here? The point over here is that there are two kinds of mitzvot. There are two kinds of mitzvot. And once you have the concept, you can expand it, you know, to other mitzvot and see which category it falls into. Two categories. One category is that the mitzvah is fulfilled by the performance and there's no room for addition whatsoever. Such a case would be, for example, the case of, sorry? Yes. For example, lulav, you did the mitzvah of lulav on sukkah. So once you picked it up, you were yotzei. That's it. Except for the fact of the shake and the nuim during challah, but that's a different point. Once you fulfilled the mitzvah, shofar on Rosh Hashanah. You're obligated to blow the shofar for a certain amount of time, and once you fulfill this, it does not lend itself to addition. And then there are mitzvot which lend themselves to addition, and you fulfilled it. That's what he's saying. If you just hold this mitzvah, since the very nature of the mitzvah is to be immersed in the ideas that pertain to the Exodus, it can be performed on different levels. That's an important thing to know. It can be performed at a minimalistic level. And it's good to know this, but practically speaking, you may be having different yes, and some people aren't that learned, aren't that interested, but they can still perform the basics of the mitzvah to tell over the rudimentary story. You see, and you'll even see the Haggadah itself is going to illustrate the different types of children. What do you say to this one, what you say to that one. So the way you fulfill this mitzvah has its objective element, depending upon the nature of the person whom it's being fulfilled by and with. However, on the ultimate level, since we are exploring an area which is partakes of the infinite wisdom of God, Kalamada, once you get involved in the story, the more you're involved, the more you're drawn after the ideas, you have a greater fulfillment, what we call a greater kinyan hamitzvah. And in fact, I'm going to tell you something else that's interesting, another interesting piece of information. if somebody was to ask you, when is it a mitzvah of the Torah to stay up and learn all night? Let's say somebody asked you that question. You would probably say Shvuah, right? What, Dad?
I'm not
going to
fall into
that. You're not going to fall into that. It's very interesting. Most people would say Shvuah. The truth of the matter is that there's no mitzvah from the Torah to stay up all night and learn on Shvuah, although that's a minhag. Okay, that's a minhag, and that's something which should be discussed. We do it in yeshiva, but there's a problem with the minhag too, because it interferes with things. If a person stays up all night and learns, then sleeps the whole day, that's a big problem. That's a big problem in terms of whether he's fulfilling the mitzvah of Yom Tov. Okay, but there are ways of doing it. But there's no mitzvah from the Torah to stay up all night. Okay, there is the only time when it's brought down la'alacha, it's a mitzvah to stay up, not all night. It's an interesting formulation. After you've concluded with the Seder, what you're supposed to do is to stay up and study Torah. Not till night. Until he's overcome by sleep. You're not supposed to force, you don't have to force yourself to stay up. But what you're supposed to do is to stay up and learn ideas pertaining to the Exodus, or any ideas of Torah, because all Torah is interrelated, until he falls asleep. Once he falls asleep, that's a very strange kind of a formulation. So I'm going to try and explain that. But here you see the concept. That certain mitzvahs, we have the idea called Marba Reza Meshubach. And you yourself can see the case. Bika Cholim, for example. Bika Cholim, to me, in that area, there's a basic mitzvah to visit the sick. But that certainly lends itself to Kalam Ada. A person can just come in, pay for his visit, and leave. You've got the mitzvah. See? But if you stay longer, and you extend yourself, and you speak to the person, and do things for the person, feed the person, it's a greater key in a mitzvah. So that's Kalam Ada Reza Meshubach. And you should be able to identify in your own mind. Because sometimes people get crazy. They try to be marba in areas where there's no shvach. That's when they try to do more than is necessary. You know what I'm talking about? And then in cases where there is a benefit, then maybe they're not so much. It's very important to know the nature of the mitzvah. That's why it points out here, kol ha-marba reiz ha-meshubah. If the Agada would not have pointed that out to us, then we'd have to take a different approach to the whole thing. Tzedakah, for example, kol ha-marba reiz ha-meshubah. But if you gave, and then he comes, you give him, you fulfilled your mitzvah tzedakah. Now, I will return to the idea that Ramit mentioned, but I just want to go ahead to the next story, which is a direct connection, the Maisa. You'll see the interconnectedness of the segments over here. Immediately upon learning this, we now have this famous story of these Tanayim. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Tarfon, who were reclining, which means they were having the Seder, in Bnei Brak. And they were discussing Yetzias Mitzrayim, Kol Oso Alo, the entire night. They went on through the night, and they were not overcome by sleep. Until their students came to them, and said to them, our teachers, our Rabbeim, Yetzias Mat Kriya Shema Shel Shachar, it's time to say Kriya Shema Shel Shachar. So they interrupted them because it was time for Krishna. What's the purpose of the story? It's a nice little anecdote. It's a nice little historical. So what? What is it conveying to us? And how does it fit into the whole web of the Agada? Two basic ideas. One very important idea is that even though we said, from a practical standpoint, a person can be a smicha, can be an expert, but from an ultimate standpoint, there's no such thing as a person who knows it all. The truth is that as we said many times, the greater a person is, the more knowledge that he has, the more of an anav. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu hoya anav mikol fish. He was the most humble. Because true humbleness can only come from one thing. It's not what people think it is. People think that humbleness is a denial of reality. If the person says, I'm nothing, I'm a nobody. But one second, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't act that way. Moshe Rabbeinu was quite, he knew what the Torah said, Velo Kamo Nevi Kamosha, and didn't he tell the Jews, you deal with, you set up a court system, called Devra Katan, the small things, Yishmatu Haim, Bring me the tough problem. Don't bother me with the poor question. I mean, he got a little bit in trouble, but the fact is, he did know that he was the greatest man that would ever exist in all of history. So where's the anivus? The true anivus is that he was not really great in his own eyes, because the true anivus can only come from an appreciation of the infinite wisdom of God. And that's why the greater the Talmud Chacham, the greater the anivus. The anivus is always, and can only be, true anivus, true humility. Now, what we see in society around us is not, we don't know. What we see, but we never can really know. As it says in Tanakh, Ki Adam Yira Lang Ayim. Even Shmuel, who was a Navi, couldn't know. He was sent to pick a king from the sons of Yishai, and each one of them was so impressed that he was very impressed. And God said, no, he's not the one. And David, he couldn't imagine that he'd be fit to be the king. And he's the one. So there's no way, even a Navi can know what's doing within. We really don't know. And when we see manifestations of humility, I mean, we respect it, you know, kadeo, but there's also an element of chashdeo. We don't know for sure what it's coming from. We just see people acting in a certain way. But the true principle is, and I'll show you a very interesting illustration, and that is that the greater the knowledge of the person, the greater the humbleness, and the greater the arrogance and the haughtiness, you see, the more the ignorance. It's impossible for true wisdom and arrogance to go hand in hand. It's just an impossibility. I'll tell you why. Because the more a person knows, the less he realizes he has understanding. Because the only way to get out of humbleness is by an appreciation of what's really out there. Now, if you don't know too much, you've learned a little bit of science. And you don't know the whole field, so you're very proud of yourself. Well, I know a lot. And you feel very haughty. And you look down at other people. But a person who, like an Einstein, who has the capacity to see what's out there, realizes that what he knows is nothing. Because he's focused on the infinite. And the same is true with regard to Chachma. That the greater the individual, the more he realizes that he don't know. And that's why that's the illustration over here. That who are the ones that had to stay up all night long telling over the story? Precisely the greatest minds. See? It's to show you that when you study Torah properly, that there's always more. There's always more that you can learn. And you should not look at it as something, I've done this already, and it's boring and it's repetitious. There's always new angles if you're involved in the proper study of Torah. That's the first thing. Now, as far as that's an easy thing like this, so the question has been raised, but we can only do the mitzvah of Sefer. There's a big problem resolving around this. Up until midnight, because that's the time of the eating. That's why we have to finish, we have to make sure we eat after Koman. You can't eat the carbon after midnight. And Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim is supposed to be conducted at the time when you're supposed to do the mitzvah. So you would think that after midnight, you can't do it anymore. So how are they doing the mitzvah of Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim after midnight when that's not the time of the mitzvah? Now that's a good question. It shows like this, that in terms of the Maisa Mitzvah, the activity, the performance of the Mitzvah, that's supposed to be done, the time for the Mitzvah is prior to midnight. Obviously, at the time when you can perform the Mitzvah of Matzah and Morah. That's, of course, when they began the Mitzvah. You see? But what is the Mitzvah? To engage in a study, investigation of the areas containing the Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now, the quality of that activity, to what extent are you immersed in that? How deeply have you probed into that? Well, you know, when a person gets involved in something to the ultimate level, he just can't stop. He has to keep going. So, there's no mitzvah past midnight. You see, they were going even to the next day. That is not the time for performing the mitzvah. They couldn't start at that time. But in the framework of a continuation, it reflects back on the quality of the mitzvah, which they had begun from before. Then that is a mitzvah. It's part of the mitzvah. Since they began at the proper time, and the quality of that discussion was such that you can't just cut it off. It's an impossibility. Once you get deeply involved in the ideas, you might keep going.
Okay, so we're discussing the chacham,
to demonstrate
the wise
son. The quality of the
and he said he
that
breaks his question down the category. What are the testimonies?
Chukim.
Chukim are what's referred to as statutes. And the common understanding is that these are laws that we are obliged to observe, even though they don't have any discernible reason. And I say discernible because it would be erroneous to imagine that the laws, for example, of shakni, of wearing garments with the woman, or any of the other mishpatim statutes in Torah, do not have a reason. That would be completely false. And the Rambam points out in the Moreh, in the guide, the
Plex,
that
you see.
What
you mean? You take your mind off just that.
Go ahead.
You
go to
that. That's not a petition.
Have reason.
It's just a reason. Reading something like that.
And even though we may not know the reason for it, they are still beneficial to us.
Said,
and why
like a bird?
The wiser a person is, the more knowledge of Torah, the greater his understanding.
I'm not blaming him.
And you mentioned that he was that the Shlomo and others
studied
the Talmud. So he discovered all of them except for the Paraduma, for example.
And
the Rambam, one of the sections
you
in the guide, has a section on the reasons for the problem. He seeks to give explanations and reasons. And he says that he has been able to discover the reasons for many people, but he has not been able to discover the reasons for all the people. But the basic underlying idea, the Rambam says the same thing, is that all of the
people are totally preoccupied with it.
And maybe I'll try and illustrate, because in the case of
Shabbos,
which everybody will say, well, it has no reason, we just do it because God commanded us. That's not correct.
You achieve the state of preoccupation.
The reason it contains very profound
time,
ideas.
Even though it's past the time,
and
I did
many years ago here a sheer, an explanation of the deeper reason behind shot.
That's why they were,
which serves as an illustration to me.
Now, the only thing I want to ask
that even laws such as shot, when you
talk
about the reason behind shot, of course, is not apparent superficially. But if you study it at an in-depth level with the proper sources, for example, there's an Ebenezer who expresses the idea in the form of what he calls a sub, a hint. If you know how to decipher it, then you'll find that it has profound
wisdom.
That's something that we'll try and come back to sometime in the spring.
So that's just a fact.
I'm just making the point right now.
And
that
you
should revise your attitude. You shouldn't think that
which
is doing certain things that happen when you just got to end.
Or maybe they were up all night and they were aware.
And then, of course, there's the mishpatim, which
so
makes sense to us. The laws that govern relations between people.
Now, my question is,
against stealing, against harming people, obligations to help your fellow man, and then not to speak Russian and things like that. These are what we would call mishpatim. These are laws whose benefit
seems to be expressed.
Reason is apparent to us, and I guess we could say that any rational society would ordain such laws.
There are two kinds of theocracy.
That's the category of mishpatim. So that's what he says. What are they?
We just can't get you can't talk about it.
Asher tziva Hashem Elokeichem Eschem. And
that's
the Lord, our God,
but
command
and
all,
it doesn't mean
that
he's totally forgotten. Yeah, about everything else in your life.
Now we have to discover what is it that makes him suffer. Because in terms of knowledge, he doesn't seem to be any more advanced than the Russians.
For a long time, your best friend, and
he just
hasn't
really
known.
So why is it? What makes him into a chacham?
And everything.
And the answer is, the answer is, the
Avatar
Morlo,
because
we're getting instruction over here. When
the morning comes,
and
you know that you have to,
and you also say, "Go
down, forgot about that."
You see. You should teach him the law of the
Talmidim.
Aimach kiran achara pesach
degree of involvement.
Tell them involved. Now some say that means all the laws up to
with
up to the law that
but comes back to
you're not allowed to have any. You know what I mean?
And that was another one.
We had the basic English, so we had the Kam Pesach.
So
the Kam Pesach,
all of the energy was totally removed from every other area and totally focused.
That was the last thing that a person ate.
Everything else.
And afterwards, he was not committed to eat anything else.
Them, of course,
that would take away the
taste.
And today, we have the same
minhag,
but we don't have the Kam Pesach, but we have the
Avodah Zarah.
The matzah. And certainly,
people
eat at the end. is a zecher for the carbon pesach.
And we don't forget that we have to eat.
And
it needs to say that
I mentioned the point that people should do their best to make sure that they are capable of eating at that point. They shouldn't stuff themselves at a point where they can't eat. Because then you're not ready to go to the mitzvah.
That's one level.
That's not anything you can do.
In the back of your mind, you're fully aware.
Yeah, it's very hard. Even if you're not eating a lot.
Here, they got but, so totally involved.
But wait a while,
if
you can.
That it removes the energy from every other area.
That when a person reaches a certain point of satiation, it's not even considered eating
anymore. The students were not.
If you just stuffed it down,
the students were not. It's called a full of gum. They remember that it's not sufficient.
Okay.
So that's to illustrate.
In other words, the type of eating where the person is so full that he. He can't tolerate the idea of any more food.
Let's just put a little book, don't eat.
Like a gunpoint. That's not achilu, though. That's not the achilu. And
then,
well, I don't know.
The Torah spoke.
Besides the fact that it's a mitzvah, so that it should be done properly.
One is a chacham.
Something which is painful to you or distasteful.
Anyway, the Russia.
I'm sorry. Let's get back to the basic point. What is it that.
And this
characterizes
more or less simple. And
what's the nature of the
advice? Yes, right? The effort should be a day
and you should tell him to offer the best.
And one,
what will make him come? And somebody asked also, is that isn't he also saying
it is a
Hashem that God commanded you?
Yes, understand that.
Yet over here, what he does not say, as we say concerning the wicked tribe,
are we talking about
talking about someone who's just not old enough? What is the difference?
So then that's not a type.
He says the same
as well.
We must be talking about four different types. And
the first is the way for the expression.
Just too young, because then he's not a type.
The most important
thing in terms of
the rest is three.
The categories of
just formulating a question about that.
I understand that's one type.
Russia
unfortunately, that's
type.
Not stressed enough.
But we have to understand what
school.
And what
but the proper formulation of a question. When you're studying a subject matter, you have to know
what
are the appropriate questions.
Let's take a look at the
just by the way you frame a question can make it a great deal easier to arrive at the answer.
What are the.
You should be clear about what the question is.
So
you see, he's a chacham, even though he doesn't have any knowledge.
That
he doesn't know.
God,
yes,
that the Lord our God has provided you.
He is in the ideal state that the Torah is for the
and you too,
which is the night,
in accordance with the Lord
that you are supposed to transmit the basics of the Masorah to the next generation, to your child.
That you can't eat anything.
Yeah. Now, he's observed the phenomenon.
That once you
it's not an impulse reaction.
So then you can't
you're supposed to take things to grab an attention to them.
You're not.
That's the whole idea.
And that's
what
you're using afterwards.
And we
but
observe
to
that
begin
with,
you don't have to eat them.
Of course, before you even
one,
ask,
you know, Allah,
most people, simply blurt out
something
that comes
take.
To their mind. He's not impulsive. You see he's not impulsive, because
so
he's already observed.
The other
he's observed.
Okay, so Baron, we're going to go on after the Russian.
The Chacham has
observed. But bear in mind, what makes him...
One thing, not the Russian.
The Chacham, and what the Russian is impulsive.
Because the Russia has an emotional reaction. He sees what you're doing.
How it's
it doesn't
to
appeal to him emotionally. It doesn't make
Russian.
Sense to him. So he's already reached a conclusion.
What does
the
Russian say?
So I want to know why you
what
meaning
does
that
have to
this Russia?
To you.
The Chacham
Lachem
phenomenon.
Below love. To you, and not
now, there's two types. One second, thing. We'll see.
And since he removed himself from the category.
There's two types of curiosity.
He's coping.
One type of curiosity is
you
see
the phenomenon
that he's in denial.
You get stuck
in the road,
the traffic slows down, and
there's nothing really blocking it. It's just that
people so obviously the way the rich
see.
There's an
accident.
What he said was one word, Bacham.
That's one type of curiosity. That's emotional curiosity.
Yeah, I know.
Then there's another kind of curiosity.
That's the curiosity of the Chacham.
Now, where do we see the illustration of this in the Torah?
And what do? You break his teeth.
The
which is not ridiculous.
Moshe saw what happened. And he saw the Ineas Nebor Breish,
did God do
the thing? And behold, bush was being consumed.
He was there,
and the bush was not consumed. It was burning, but it wasn't consumed.
Now,
okay, up to that point,
let's just
we don't see anything unique about Moshe. And Moshe said, "Asurah of the earth, let me turn and see." It's a mara hagadol hazeh.
Just because of one word,
wondrous sight.
Okay, it's true. He said that's them.
Madu al
the outcome of the problem obviously is different.
He was searching for the reason.
Let's forget about that for the time being.
In other words,
it's not that
you regard
he's seen
a a very interesting phenomenon. Something amazing.
Russia,
most people would want to come out to see. For example, if an airplane crashes or whatever, everybody wants to. There's a tremendous force in a person, emotional curiosity.
Is that the point? He denies God?
But in most people, it never gets to
God. He denies God.
They turn, they see, and once they see it, they move on. Okay, now I see what this can happen.
So how are we answering it?
But there's a difference between that and the curiosity of the thinker, the one who's searching for knowledge. The emotion of anything is another opportunity to obtain knowledge.
Denigrated.
And that's why Yahweh
That's what God saw.
That's what God saw.
Me and you. You were there, God.
His intellectual curiosity.
Well, he denies God, so then what kind of a breakdown is it?
The Chacham is the one who
gives
us
good advice,
who sees the phenomenon,
and he with the person.
And he observes
his personality.
And he doesn't ask the question until
so
I would like to focus
on the definition of the rational.
That's why you see categorization.
The distinction
that's
the Chacham
and
the
standpoint of that. I mean, on the surface, it doesn't
he
knows,
he
knows
it.
There are different things that he
said
over
here.
And he said, Lacham. There are testimonies. There are mishpatim. That's something different.
And then there's chukim.
That's another thing.
He's not
the ability to isolate, categorize, and
the key,
he recognizes.
This is a very, very important point.
And that is,
you know,
there's tremendous chacham over here. And that's why it gets about.
The key of
that chacham over here to you is totally different than the lacham of the
rashi. You go over here, see?
The
form of
idolatry.
It's not over idolatry.
It has no objective reality.
It's very friendly.
No,
but
here he says, I said, Zero is God, the Lord our God.
It's a very dangerous phenomenon.
So he is fully in line. This is exactly
of all the
in line with the
Misled.
That doesn't happen.
We've been studying
it for many, many years.
So what's
the starting point?
What is the most dangerous thing about
the
college? At a college, you don't think about it.
Goes back to Sinai. That when the Jews have Kodesh,
it does. It definitely does.
But
specifically, you mean like a certain course?
We're doing it here.
Talking about what
which means to say that that's evolution
and so on.
So
forth is right.
I mean, if a person's not a
Christian, they didn't see it.
And so
it can be a
good idea
to read into the concept of
that's one thing. But you know, there's another thing which is that you must be
invasive,
it must be
very damaging.
Even if we can't understand it,
the underlying philosophy.
Point,
that foundation point
of everybody
is, and it stems from the colleges,
story of
which is got a tremendous effect on
God.
And that is that there's no such thing as an objective reality. It's all subject.
It doesn't matter. I know the truth is the truth.
Whatever is
true for you, it's true for you.
Properly.
And whatever is true for you is responsible.
I can't relate to it.
But say that there's an objective reality. There's one truth that everybody has to
admit to.
That's certain.
There's no such understanding.
And as I go along,
but in terms of the more able morality,
in terms of
it becomes something which I would do,
even if God had not commanded,
and how I will
to live one's
life,
philosophical,
but that's a lifelong process.
It's relativism,
and that's
relativism according to Yahweh,
the first
American Tehillim,
and
that
said
is
about the
that is
the Torah that Hashem
created
no harm
for His desire.
Is in the Torah of God.
The Torah itself,
and
His Torah, the Yerke Yom of Arayla.
Because
he meditates
day and night.
So the commentary
says
no day change.
It's not the true idea of
the Torah
as far as
Hashem.
Because God
happens to believe with
an
objectively true and a rational person's
desire.
His desire is
to
God's Torah. But what does he meditate in?
Yom Ruin don't
say.
Yom Ruin
don't
say. How does it mean
that
I feel wrong in God's Torah
to becoming his own
Torah?
So this expresses
the whole philosophy.
That's what the Rambam said. The Rambam in fact says
it's impossible.
When you first begin, you can't do your
explanation.
You can't be doing it because it's your personal philosophy.
You're not sure if it's correct or not.
Because
if you say,
how do you know?
You haven't studied it.
If you're going to wait,
you're
going to spend your whole life.
If you're not going to make a commitment,
and he would say
you studied it thoroughly, then
there's
no way to start.
It's an impossibility.
And the starting point is
the
recognition that comes from God.
That's
why
his desire,
once he understands,
he realizes
that
the Torah is the work of God,
so therefore
contains
infinite wisdom,
so that's my desire.
Now my desire is to be involved in the study of God's Torah.
It's God's Torah.
But after
he begins to learn the methodology
and he obtains knowledge,
and
he sees the reasons for
everything,
then it's Torah's son, it's his own.
And
his own body of wisdom.
In the sense that
he realizes what the idea of the
troops are
and so forth.
Then he meditates
very much.
If he doesn't reach that level of Torah,
that it's so clear to him, because nobody
except
has listen,
that he would come to the same conclusion himself. He's not just doing it because it makes sense to me, but I have no choice.
Not to follow.
But no, he's saying it because nobody's got the right to impose that idea.
It's reality.
And that story is not
extended. That's the other objective.
So and that's basically upon
the way you relate to
the Chacham. I recognize, I see, that you people are involved in something
background.
Which contains
but
great wisdom.
That is the opposite truth.
He studied it enough.
Before
he observed, he sees. He's categorized differently.
The system of structure.
Which is subject to classification. I recognize that you are engaged in a body of great wisdom.
And why? Because this comes from God.
Has given it over to you.
That's the idea of Masorah.
And that's where the basis
that God set up a system
of Masorah
transmission
so that every generation will pass it on to the next generation. And it's a fundamental idea of Yadav that you can't really obtain a level of mastery and power without a Rebbe. You've got to go to the Balei HaMasorah, to the ones who have the Masorah. And that's exactly the point at which he's at. He's at that point where he recognizes he's a Chacham because he recognizes that he doesn't have knowledge. See, the Russian doesn't recognize that. That's the hallmark. The hallmark of ordinary Russia is the person who recognizes that he's lacking in
knowledge.
And what's evil about the Russia is not so much that he's ignorant.
He's a person kind of Jew.
It's one thing. Ignorance per se is not a crime. But the crime is that a person
he's the one
is ignorant, then he's not aware that he's ignorant, and he acts as though he knows. Russia is ignorant, but he's acting as though he really knows. The Chacham is ignorant, but he's a Chacham because he knows that he doesn't know. And that itself is not so terrible because God gave him somebody that you can go to the Balei HaMasorah. So that's what makes him into a Chacham. He has the approach, the attitude, the tools of a Chacham, which, if they are developed properly, will lead to a personal tremendous Chacham. Now, before we get to that, what is the answer, though? What are we supposed to now? What is the suggestion that the God is giving to us? If we go to the Chacham. What do you mean, the Atkar Emorlo Kehilcha Zepetach? And what's the
job?
What's the stress, though? What's the stress? Of course he's supposed to teach. What is the specific idea that's being told? What would I look for?
Is it obvious? They want to be a Jewish people.
Is
not the individual wants to be a Jew.
That him, you don't just teach him the general reasons, the general history, what's the place. Of course, you teach him that. But the
out.
Everything has to be demonstrated through the Chachma, which is embedded in the Halacha.
And
that's something that most people are not aware of. People are attracted to being involved in the history, in the reason, in the philosophy.
It's
important.
But in
the educational approach of Yadav is
can't
the emphasis,
in fact,
at least at the beginning, has to be in Halacha.
Because
most people don't realize that Halacha is not just rules and regulations. The Halacha contains tremendous wisdom, all of the content. And if a person is going to, this is extremely important. Because you see, in our day, in our time especially, many people write about more books about Judaism and Jewish history.
So
than any
the end, that was the only principle that matters.
And I'm not talking about Halacha, but we're about the philosophy of Judaism, the history of Judaism, the positions about what Judaism say about this thing and that thing. And you see, the authors are people that maybe they study Jewish philosophy, but they really are not the masters of Halacha.
I'll have nothing to do with you. I'll be finished with you.
Now, our position is that if a person is not a master of Talmudic thinking, if he's not a master of Halacha, then he really can't be a true Jewish philosopher. All of the great, the classic Jewish philosophers,
parents don't have
go ancient times and medieval times,
even in modern times, we don't have that many Jewish philosophers. Unfortunately, those who represent themselves as Jewish philosophers would not fit that category, because these are people that have dabbled in philosophy, but they're not met the
approval of the joke.
And it's impossible for a person to arrive at correct ideas in the area of Jewish philosophy. He is a master of halacha and Talmudic analysis.
Result.
Because the only thing you need that the Talmudic way of thinking is the gateway to knowledge of all areas of Jewish thought.
Are based upon the same methodology.
If you haven't mastered that methodology, then you can't just start reading. You read the Sadigan,
who kept the Jewish
story, master of Talmud, Sadigan, the Rambam, you can read all the philosophers, but it will not be true Jewish philosophy. Because he doesn't know the methodology, he doesn't know the way of reading. That's why. But the emphasis is, but it's got to be the ideas of Torah as they are expressed in the Allah, in the mitzvot halayla, in the mitzvot of the
night, and the
analyses of the mitzvot, the definition behind the mitzvot.
That's the essence over here.
Kehilcha chesed.
Now, we have two more sons left.
Yes.
Because it's always part of everyone.
The Tom.
What does he say? Now, usually that's translated as a simple, right?
What kind of
break simple?
What kind of what do you
naive?
Mean?
Naive.
I don't know.
Russia, evil person.
I don't know. Yagavish Tom.
Yeah, well, you might have evil is.
I'm not quite sure. Is that a negative term? Is that a neutral term, Tom? Tom means usually means something without a blemish. Tanim, Tanim to you. You should be whole. You should be complete.
Reality, there is a reality.
What did he say?
And there is a truth.
What's this?
And that truth is there.
It always does.
We can sometimes discover it. But we're
no. No. He's not. Well, he's obviously today.
He's
needed a rush.
So what is he?
It's really a...
Let's take a look at what you're supposed to say.
The Amarte love,
because
and you shall say to him,
most people today,
with a mighty hand,
that we're talking about,
the honor of Hashem
is right, because it's not their fault.
God take us out of Egypt.
They only the way they are because of the way they were made.
From the house of
Ramon. Now, what's the basis of the
idea? The only ones that were permitted...
Who is the
people that are heretics.
And what is the concept?
What is the idea? They speak against, they seek to destroy the true ideas.
I don't understand.
That the only ones that are punished are the actual leaders.
I understand the rest.
Who originate. Those
each one poses a challenge.
You better.
The Chacham poses a challenge because
he's
searching for
the underlying wisdom behind the system.
That's fantastic.
They never had access to the
system. So therefore, we're supposed to teach him,
but don't get caught up in philosophy.
See, that's why you
teach him the Chacham.
He didn't express in the Allah.
The person is being regarded as
the Russian was very
important.
Because
we've explained.
He denies the great objective validity over here, but he is attached to it in an
emotional way.
So let's try and break him down.
Because he doesn't find it.
But in time, what's the idea of the time?
What's the point?
Who is this time?
What is the category that he represents?
He represents a certain category.
I don't know.
I mentioned last week.
We tend to think that he's just a little
younger.
Is that what we're talking about?
That we're talking about
premature,
but
undeveloped,
as opposed he will be.
So really, he's a mini chacham.
What is
he? He's going to be a mini chacham
or a Russia?
Objective reality.
How would you explain the Tom?
I don't know. I think it's a certain type. I don't think that you have to explain it in terms of youth, that he's just younger, undeveloped.
I think it's a characterological type.
The question of the time is unsophisticated, it's undefined. He hasn't isolated the phenomenon. He hasn't made any observations about the phenomenon. He hasn't clarified his point. So he's just on the level of, I see something's happening, I see something's going on, tell me what's happening.
You see,
a Russia is different. A Russia has already reached certain conclusions. He hasn't reached any conclusions. You see, and a Chacham is someone who's more advanced because he recognizes his wisdom, and he classifies and he clarifies and he pinpoints what he wants. That's a much better questioner.
He's making it clear to you exactly what he's looking for. He's not. This individual is... He's not completely turned off. He's not totally turned off. But the amount of effort and energy that he's put into it is only on the level of, you know, okay, tell me what's going on over here. What's happening? He hasn't activated.
The objective is Lima, right?
The objective is to try and change the Russia. Otherwise, why deal with him? The point is, what is the best... These are the four character types of sons that you're going to have to deal with. Now, we have one objective for all of them. That is to raise them to the level of chachma, of knowledge of Torah and commitment. So the answer, the way we explained it, was not to throw the Russia out, because why deal with him altogether? The answer was designed to break down his premises, his false premises, and then, of course, to bring him over to the true ideas. The Russia can very well become the chacham of the next year. In other words, the whole point of the Maggadah, the whole benefit of teaching is, you have to understand, the idea is most effective when the student is ready for it. That's the whole point of the Agada. That just lecturing doesn't have much of an effect upon people. But the most effective type of an answer is one which comes as a response to the curiosity of the questioner. Now, at this point in time, he's not interested in halacha. You see, he hasn't. That's not what he's curious about. If you're going to start explaining the halacha, then you're just going to turn him off. And it's very practical information, because you have different kinds of people coming to the theater. He's not interested. Maybe, well, he hasn't. Whether he knows it or not is not as important as the point that he's really not manifesting an interest. That's not what he's asking about. What he wants to know is, like, why? What's going on? He's more directed towards knowing why we're doing this. And if you're going to deal with this person, you're going to have to make your start from the standpoint of his emotional curiosity. That's where the answer, I think, is to really bring out the drama. Here's where you have to use drama. You have to work with his emotions. See, the chacham, you have to work with his emotions. The chacham is, you work with his mind. He wants science. He wants the science of halacha. He wants scientific. He wants the logic. If you're going to start going into all the explanations of the dramatic stuff, that's right. The Tom, however, is not interested in all of the fine points of halacha at this point in time. He's not ready for it. Intellectually, he's not ready for it. I don't know. When I say that, I don't know if it's because he's not old enough. It doesn't make any difference. That's not the point. He's not developed enough. He hasn't reached that level. It is the same. Well, you could have people, the Tom can be in his 40s, as far as I'm concerned. There are some people that never get beyond a simplistic, simplistic explanation. Why this? Yeah. Now, the way to do it, I think what the Agada is, to increase his interest. He has enough interest to ask Mazos, but the interest level is not that great either. That's what you have to realize. He's somebody that has to be won over more. You've got to be hooked. And you do so by engaging him in terms of the drama. The drama. That's why it says, with a mighty hand, b'chozek yad. That's things that appeal to his imagination. You have to appeal to his imagination. And God took us out of Egypt, from the house of bondage, we were slaves. You must do it in a way which really gets them excited and interested. And that's why it makes a tremendous impression upon him. And once it makes an impression upon him, so then it'll become a subject of curiosity for him. And then you go beyond that. You see? Then, of course, you have to utilize the opportunities in telling him the story. You always try and utilize opportunities to get it. You can always, even telling a story, you can do it in such a way that you get him to ask the question, well, why did it happen this way, and why not another way? But but I'll tell you this. See, it doesn't mean to say that you just tell him the story in a simple, dramatic way. You know, like you show him the movie, the Ten Commandments, the Jews. That's great. That's part of the idea, to utilize drama. But it doesn't mean to say that you don't try and engage in intellect.
you do try and engage his intellect. Because you can tell a story in a way that you ask certain questions. You get his mind working. The point of it is a very important point of it. The difference between the Chacham and the Tam is this. It doesn't mean to say that the Tam is not interested in any kind of understanding. He wants to understand, but his understanding is directly associated with his emotional curiosity. For example, a person that ordinarily is not interested in using his mind would never study a black mind. But if he turns on the TV and there's a fascinating murder mystery, which really you have to start thinking, who did it? And so all of a sudden the same person is starting to think, and he's coming up with theories, and they're not dead. He's not stupid, he's intelligent, he has tremendous theories, he worked out four possibilities, it's more than you thought of. And then the show is over. And then you say to him, okay, let's study some Gemara. Gemara? Forget it. So, in other words, he does enjoy the activity of thinking, of being challenged, of coming up with ideas, but only if it's connected to something which is hitting the emotion. It's a very important thing to know. And that's how you get a person involved in learning. Sometimes, until the Chacham is one who's interested in the activity of study in his own right, abstract. You find this in the yeshiva. When a person reaches a certain level of enjoyment of abstract thought, any Gemara, it doesn't matter, because what they're interested in is the underlying principles, the abstract principles. So the subject matter of the Gemara doesn't matter to them. They don't care what the subject matter is. But when you're first starting out, people say that, I don't want to study about that subject. What do I care about an ox goring another animal? What do I care? No, let's do something interesting. Let's do something about the murder. We had an execution. The Sanhedrin. Now I'd like to find out about it. You see, because that's exciting to me. Okay, so what do you do? The truth of the matter is that if you are really tuned in to the underlying enjoyment of Talmudic thinking, you're going to enjoy any subject the same. It doesn't make any difference. But the point is that requires a very advanced level. Where the person's enjoyment is not stemming from the fact that it's hitting certain emotions, he's satisfying emotions. However, to begin with, there you must recognize, the point is, you're an educator tonight. That's why the whole purpose of including the four sons in the Agada is because you, the one who's conducting the study, you're the educator. You have to recognize the level. These are very important lessons in terms of your own children throughout the whole year. You see? No. You can get tremendous results. You can get a child who otherwise is not interested in ideas suddenly tremendously interested in ideas, provided that it's connected to those areas of emotional excitement that get him turned on. Once he's turned on, you see, he's going to be involved in thinking, involved in ideas. That's what you have to do. That's the challenge. Each son is a challenge. The Chacham is a challenge. The Rosh is a very big challenge. And the Tam is a challenge. How can I get this person's mind activated? Okay, now if you're going to use the same approach that you use with the Chacham, it's not going to work. Okay? You can get his mind activated, but first you've got to get the emotions involved. Once the emotions are involved, then you start to ask questions. You see, then you pose problems, because then his mind is working. But his mind is not going to be activated until his emotions are activated, as opposed to the Chacham, whose mind is ready to work. That's the essential difference. Now come to the fourth son, the She'eni Yodei Lishol. He doesn't know how to ask. Okay. So what kind of a person is he? What are we talking about? Hapsachlo. You open him up, so to speak. You initiate for him. Shenemar says, now, this is very interesting. What's the pasuk that's quoted? Vigarta levincha, you shall tell to your child on that night, on that day, saying, Bavurzeh, Os Arushem Li, Besaisim Mizraim. Because of this, did God do for me when he took me out of Egypt? Now, interesting, isn't that the same thing that we say to the Russia? It says the same thing to the Russia. If you take a look at the answer to the Russia, it's the same thing about Verza, because Asad Hashem leave the faith in Mizraim. I know, but it's the same pasuk. It's the same pasuk. So first of all,
describe to me, in every case that we dealt with, we describe the essence, the essential feature of the individual. What character type he is. What character type are we talking about over here? And what's the chiddush? What is that kind of telling me over here? What's the problem with this person? He doesn't have to ask. What does that mean? We've been dealing with the question as to whether the various types are just talking about different stages of advancement in terms of like age and maturation. Or no, they're character types. And I think, what is this? Do we mean to say that he's so infantile that he hasn't reached the point where he knows how to even talk, communicate, and that's why he's any of the Elisha? I mean, that's a simplistic understanding. He's any of the Elisha. He's like a little kid. He can't even ask a question. He's what? I think that any day Elisha would be more in the sense that he's really not interested. He's lacking any curiosity. He's totally happy. There's no problem for him. See, for every one of the other ones, every one of the other sons was bothered. The Chacham is bothered, but he's troubled by the fact that he wants wisdom. He recognizes the wisdom. The Rasha is troubled. Like, why are you doing this? Doesn't make any sense to me. Even the Tam is troubled. Something is going on, and I would like to know what's going on. I have a certain desire to know what's going on. But this is the most... This one really shouldn't even be included. This one should not be included. Because he's not part of the Seder. He's just sitting there. He's content. This is the most difficult person to deal with. You'll find even the rebellious. It's much easier to deal with the rebellious student.
Is it different?
Yeah.
Yes.
He's lacking any desire.
Is he different or is he accepting?
It doesn't make any difference. He's both. He could be accepting, but he's not relating to it in terms of getting any knowledge about it. That's the problem. Now, it follows with the basic premise that education, in order for it to be effective, has to relate to the curiosity of the individual. It presupposes. The truth of the matter is that this is a big fish. Because bear in mind that this goes back to the basic mitzvah of the night. The basic mitzvah of the night is the gazel of info. You have an obligation to transmit the heritage, so to speak, the foundation of the Torah to your child on this night. Now, the Torah therefore presupposes that you have the individual who's ready. You have the child who's asking a question. Your obligation is to provide the answer. But here's an individual that doesn't have a question. In other words, you don't have the proper, there's no student over here. In order to have a teaching situation, you have to have a teacher and a student. But here, and the first three were students. They got rebellious students. A simpler student. You don't want to presuppose somebody that's lacking in mental ability. No, not at all. What Jesse is saying is that it's a quality of passivity. That's the feature over here. Passivity. Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Well, that's exactly. Well, no? Well, that's passivity. I don't know that it's, whether this person has creativity or not. Oh, okay. Okay, so that's more or less... Okay. Now, if that's the case, what is the answer? What's the advice? What's the guy telling you? So what does it mean? The guy... Let's quote. As it says, the guy told him, the same prophet, you shall tell your child on that day, saying, because of this, did God do for me when he took me out of Egypt? That's the very same pasuk that's used by the Russia. What's the answer then? What kind of an answer is this? The answer is that there is no answer here. All the other cases, the Agada gave you direction. It told you what to say. Of course, you don't have to use those exact words, but you have to understand the idea and apply it to the case. In this situation, all it said was, at Pesachlo, you have to initiate. That is to say, he's not ready at this point in time to participate. So you would think, if that's the case, I'm free of my obligation. My obligation does not relate to him. My obligation only relates to someone who is involved in asking a question, whether it be a good question or a bad question. But here there's something lacking in the individual. He's not qualified yet to participate. So you would have thought that you're free of the entire obligation. The answer is no. Your obligation goes so far, you have to create the questioner. Atvazachlon means you have to create the questioner. He needs a different kind of work. This is not what the Agata envisioned. The Agata envisioned that a person would develop. If he's developing properly, he goes through the phases. Then when he attends a Seder, he's motivated to ask a question. It could be a good question, it could be a bad question, it could be a flawed question, but it's a question. But here's an individual who's not even a questioner. So therefore, you would think that you have that ticket, you don't have a responsibility. The answer is ad pesachlo. Even if the work of on the night of Pesach is not just communicating the story, but working on the personality of the child to change him so that he does become a questioner. But what you do, it doesn't say. Ad pesachlo. You have to initiate. How do I know that? Because the pasuk is being brought down, not that you tell him that pasuk, but it's being brought down to serve as a proof that you have to initiate. Because what does the pasuk say? Vigadita. That it doesn't say that if he asks you, only if he asks you, then you have to answer. Even if he doesn't ask you, vigadita. You have to initiate. You have to tell him. You have to work on him and bring him up to the level where he can relate to it intellectually. So, even if he's not on that stage yet, for whatever reason, he just absorbs things. He's not moved. He's lacking any kind of curiosity. So you would say, look, then I don't have a responsibility. I'm only responsible to provide answers insofar as I'm dealing with people that have curiosity. Even if they're a Russia. But the Russia has curiosity. But an individual that's not involved, that has no curiosity, so I'm puttered. I have no obligation. No, that's the fourth son. Ad tzachlo, you do have. You have to work on the personality, whatever work is necessary. See, I've got to cannot give you an answer for this, because I don't know what the cause is. There can be many causes over here. The only time the Agata gives you an answer is when the son is manifesting a particular kind of a question. So we understand the question. So this is the way to go. All it's telling you over here is that you're not free. You have to search into the situation and find out what is preventing this person from asking a question. You see? And you try and work on him and get him involved. And how do I know this? Because it says, V'gad Talarincha. You see? And that's why in this instance, when it brings down, it doesn't make that deduction of leave below low. That's when, you see, when we're using the pasuk as an answer to the question of the Russia to break him down, so then it quotes that pasuk with the interpretation. You see? Because that's the kind of the content of the answer. Over here, it's not the content of the answer. It's simply brought down as a proof that you have not fulfilled your responsibility. You can't evade your responsibility. You can't say, well, look, I'll wait till next year. That you might say, look, this isn't much the time. I don't have an obligation. He's not interested, so leave him alone. Maybe next year, maybe the year after. No. The answer is, right now, at Sahlo, you have to find a way to break down whatever the barrier might be. It could be, as Jesse suggests, it could be other things. It could be he's simply just not interested. It could be an emotional thing. It could be an intellectual thing. Jesse suggested an intellectual reason for this type of phenomenon, which is a good point. I happen to like that answer, because it is true that a lot of people are just not in the framework of being a questioner. They just listen and they absorb. They are very accepting of everything. That's an Inya Dale show. They don't know that they can ask. There are a lot of people like that. That they just have a certain subservient attitude. Whatever you tell them, they listen to it. They believe. And they don't question. And then when they ask somebody else, they ask them questions. All of a sudden, they think of 100 questions. That's a very good explanation. But it's also possible that it's for other reasons as well. That's why the Agata doesn't really give you any specific direction. But it tells you one thing. Your obligation exists over here as well. And there's where you might have thought differently.